to Watch is an intimate look into the lives of prominent and influential women leaders from around the world and the challenges they faced on their journey. It's the real story behind her title. Join us every week to hear more stories about women from around the world and in your own communities at womentowatch.net. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to another week of Women to Watch. I'm Sue Rocco. Thanks so much for tuning in. Joining me this week will be Leah DeFeo. And Leah is a business executive. She is an infertility advocate, and she is an author. And Leah is going to be sharing with us a very personal story of loss that led her to the work that she's doing today. Don't forget to stay with us during the breaks, where you'll hear from our watch team of corporate partners. And if you'd like to watch the show, you can view it on our YouTube channel at W2W Media. So now I'm very honored and excited to welcome to the show Leah DeFeo. Leah, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. It's an honor to be here.
Thank you. I'm so happy to have you with me. I think the topic we're going to be discussing is very important. It's very relevant. And there's a lot of information out there that women need to know about, for sure. I want to give my audience a sense of you and where you came from, the little Leah, and what your dreams were back in the day. So tell me, what was it like to grow up in New York City?
I grew up actually in a suburb of New York City, but I loved the city and have such great memories of going in with my parents and with my family and then with friends as I got older. But I grew up in a suburb in Nassau County, and I grew up in an Italian-American household, which was a big influence on my upbringing. And it was honestly kind of an idyllic community and town. It was a really lovely place to grow up.
Yeah. Tell me, look, I know that your parents were immigrants. Where were they born?
My grandparents were born in Italy, and then my parents were born here.
They're
100% Italian. My paternal grandfather delivered olive oil throughout Brooklyn. He imported olive oil and, you know, exported it and, you know, bottled it and brought it to restaurants and to stores, grocery stores, all throughout Brooklyn. It started on a horse and carriage and then, you know, turned into a truck. My maternal grandfather was a postal worker. And once he retired, he got into the markets and became an investor. And so this kind of sense of determination and hard work and making life better for the next generation was a really big part of my growing up.
Yeah. I know what it's like to, I married into an Italian family. I didn't grow up in an Italian family. I know there's so much in the culture about food and family. And did you have any interest back then to go the entrepreneurial route, or were you always thinking about, you know, working for a company?
You know, it's funny, when kids used to sell like lemonade on the street corner, I used to make bookmarks and sell bookmarks on the street corner.
Really?
I always wanted to do something like that was creative yet business oriented. That was kind of always in my mix. It took me a long time as an adult to figure out where my sweet spot was and to figure out my career. As I was growing up, my father was a dentist. My mom worked in the office. And so I didn't have the exposure a lot of kids had to the business world. So it was harder for me, I think, to get internships and things like that. So I really learned on the job. I learned what I was interested in and what I wanted to do on the job. But I've always sought out roles that combine creativity and business. So that's always been really important to me. And I usually have a side hustle that is entrepreneurial and fun.
Yeah. And still today. How did you decide upon Duke University for college?
It was a good friend of mine had gone there, and I visited and had a great time. It was far enough away that my parents wouldn't come visit me very often. That was really exciting.
Interference.
As the oldest child in an Italian-American household, there were a lot of rules growing up, and I was kind of excited to be free of them. And it was a beautiful, beautiful campus. It was an international campus. I was excited for the diversity. My hometown didn't have as much of that. And it was a liberal arts college. And I went in thinking I wanted to do something business oriented, but not really knowing what. And so it was a place where I was able to kind of find a path and really meet friends from all over the world, which was really cool.
And a big sports school, right?
Oh, a huge sports school, but it's so funny. I'm not that much of a sports person. So it was not a big driver for me. It is for so many people. And it was, of course, fun to be a part of that culture. But it wasn't really something that, it wasn't one of the reasons that I was drawn to the school.
Yeah. Okay. Refresh my memory. Is your job with Martha Stewart first out of school?
It is. It's the first big job I had out of school. My very first job was working for an SAT prep company, actually, right out of school, which gave me really, really great experience. And I still say was my very best boss I've ever had. He really believed in me and gave me just a lot of confidence in myself. And my first corporate job was at Martha Stewart.
Can you elaborate a little on the gentleman from the SAT prep?
Yes, he ran a small business. It was on Long Island. He still does. It's called Test Takers SAT Prep. And he recognized and knew me. I was a student at the SAT prep company when I was in high school. And then to make extra money in high school, I proctored exams and, you know, helped him set up different sites and things like that. And when I graduated, I really didn't know exactly where I wanted to go. And he offered me a job in his company. And the reason why it was so compelling for me was because I got to do sales, I got to do teaching, I got to do business development. And it was all these different things that I learned in a very small environment with someone that was an absolute mentor. I mean, I met with him all the time. He really taught me so many things. He has all these little sayings, like always have a backup plan, that really throughout my career, I've thought of a lot. And so he is somebody that I'm still in touch with.
That's so nice.
Yeah, we saw each other a couple of weeks ago. And he is someone, like I said, that really believed in me and saw my potential at a time where I wasn't really sure, you know, what I wanted to do. And that job, I was most proud of helping him launch new sites and new places to, you know, run his courses and bring in new business. But I also realized that doing the same thing, like every semester was the same SAT classes and just getting new students in. And for me, that was it didn't have enough like excitement or creativity to it. And so I went to Martha Stewart, and there it was a very, very exciting time at the company. And it was a time where she was building her Kmart brand. So I went into her Kmart brand, and the first thing I really did was produce photo shoots. And I think the reason they hired me was I said to the man who became my boss, another great boss, but I said to him, you know, he said, you know, you have to be really prepared. You know, you can't forget anything in this job if you're on set. And I told him how, when I was running the SAT courses, if I forgot the number two pencils, the entire day would fall to pieces. He's like, you're hired.
Well, that my next question was, how did you get that job? Because I don't know, you know, it's a big iconic brand.
Yes.
And it's always interesting to me, how people get the opportunity. You know, did you know somebody? Did you open up the Yellow Pages and, you know, there was an ad, or not the Yellow Pages, you know, the newspaper. So, well, tell me that. How did you go from the one job over to Martha Stewart?
Through connections. And that is really how I have gotten almost all the jobs in my career. It's through identifying, you know, companies that I'm interested in, and then finding a way in through somebody. That has really been what it has been always in my career. In this instance, my boyfriend at the time, his aunt was the head of human resources. And he said, you know, let me introduce you to her. He did. And that one thing led to another. And, you know, I think people like that can open the door for you. And once you're in, it's up to you, right? She certainly didn't get me the job, but I probably wouldn't have gotten the interview without her. So I have found that anytime I'm looking for jobs and trying to interview and, you know, trying to find something, sending in a resume goes into a black hole, and you often need to have somebody to say, oh, take a look at this person, right? Vouch for you and really help you get the attention of the recruiters who are overwhelmed. You know, it's so easy in theory for people to apply for jobs these days. They have a hard job to do to figure out, you know, who's worth talking to and spending time right. with.
Just from looking on, you know, yes. on paper. Yeah, it's very hard. When I look at your career, Leah, you had very significant executive roles in iconic brands, notable brands, Martha Stewart, the Food Network, Getty Images, one of my favorite, Uncommon Goods. Yes. I love that company. I have a couple of questions. First, do you get to a certain point where you feel, okay, I've conquered this, I need to be challenged and it's time to look elsewhere? Or within that kind of a brand industry, are you pulled from companies? Do people seek you out for new projects?
It's been a mix throughout my career. So it's been a little bit of both, but I will say that a lot of times, companies really just shift and react to market conditions, right? So for example, when I first started at Food Network, they were a huge television company and they had a website for recipes, but they didn't have any e-commerce. They didn't have any products. And I came in to help them with e-commerce and then later with consumer products. But by the time I left, they were looking to really clean up their balance sheet because they were looking to be sold, right? Eventually they were bought by Discovery. And in that, when you look at the margins that are in television and television ad sales, and then you look at the margins for consumer products, ad sales looks a lot better on a balance sheet. So that was the kind of thing where, interest in what I was doing was declining. It wasn't, you know, they weren't seeking new deals. They weren't doing new partnerships. They were kind of maintaining what was happening. So ultimately, they actually eliminated our department and decided no longer, you know, they were no longer going to be doing consumer products. So there have been times where I've been let go, market changes. And there have been times where I have felt that things were not as exciting anymore. I left Martha when she went away, is what we say. She went away. And during that time, it was a very sit back and do your job. It wasn't a time for innovation. It wasn't a time for change. And I went on to a very different role. I went on to do consulting for a while with a big consulting company. And it was a great learning opportunity for me. But that was a time where it was getting a little bit kind of slow at that company. And that wasn't exciting for me.
Yeah. So you're right. You know, industries change, companies change. And yes. I think fortunate for you, you seem to have been at the right place at the right time and then continually, you know, presented with new opportunities.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Listen, we're going to go into our first break. And when we come back, I want to talk about a little bit about your personal journey and what has led you to become quite an advocate for infertility.
Sounds great.
Stay with us as we go into our first break for our watch team, and we'll be right back with Leah DeFeo.
As a female-led organization, you have to bring it every single day. We're a mashup of sort of right and left brain. So we're not just doing management consulting. We're not just doing creative services. We're not just producing an event, but we're bringing a comprehensive solution to our clients. And because of the way we approach it, we end up being bought into what it is that we're doing in a way that we truly have as much skin in the game as our clients do, whether it's bringing affordable internet to communities across the Caribbean, or it's helping Comcast with their Internet Essentials program, which is something we've been very proud to work on, or it's helping the NFL celebrate their centennial season by getting 1 million people to give at least 100 minutes to causes they care about, or helping the city of Philadelphia win the World Cup. So what's next for us? Well, we just hit just over 100 employees. I think we are at that tipping point, and I don't think there's anybody that does it better than we do. I'm Maggie Wilkinson, CEO of Athena Global Advisors, a company that is proudly based in Philadelphia.
Ladies, I'm Tiffany Curtin, a financial professional with more than 25 years of experience serving successful women, families, and businesses. Here's the reality. You don't have to be the one managing your family's finances to take ownership of your future. But if you want true confidence about how everything is going to play out, you do have to take part in the process. That doesn't mean digging into the weeds of your finances when you don't have the time or desire. It means elevating your awareness of your own circumstances. It means having the bigger conversations so you're empowered when you need to be. Let's bring confidence to your family's future without overwhelming your time. Call myself at 903-520-2709. That's 903-520-2709. Or visit Johnson Financial Group on our website, www.jfg.cc. Not .com, www.jfg.cc.
Hi, I'm Dawn Zier, CEO, board director, and executive mentor to Fortune 500 executives through my work at the EXCO Group, a firm of experienced CEOs, board directors, and global business leaders who offer real-world experience to help organizations and senior executives grow. At some point early on in your life, you've likely been asked, what do you want to be when you grow up? Some of us know right away, but most of us don't know exactly what we want to do and change our mind multiple times throughout our lives, and that's perfectly okay. Take me, for example. When I look at my career, it's been a non-linear journey and chock full of reinventions. First, I was an engineer, then I switched to marketing. I worked at a phone company, a bank, ran international for a media company, became a CEO of a health and wellness company, and now serve on multiple boards across various industries. Which brings me to one of the biggest lessons I've learned. For many successful people, their career is not a straight line. Let each chapter, each role inform the next, and don't be afraid to pivot. Also, remember that one often needs to make lateral moves rather than take a promotion to prepare for upward mobility. No experience is wasted, and every position you find yourself in is an opportunity to learn, to figure out what you want to do, and perhaps even more importantly, what you don't want to do, and also to define where your true passion lies. Please follow me on LinkedIn at Dawn Zier. And if you're a senior executive looking to grow in your career, visit excoleadership.com to learn more.
Welcome back to the show. I'm speaking this week with Leah DeFeo, and Leah is a business executive, and she's also an infertility advocate and an author. So we'll be talking a little bit about the new book. I'm excited for you.
Thank you.
So I wanted to start the second half of the show and have you share with our viewers certainly an incredibly difficult time in your life, most impactful, that has led you or pulled you away, I would say, from your executive roles with brand building into the field of infertility. So why don't we start with, you know, the year that perhaps you were going through the infertility and then what proceeded after that?
Sure. And, you know, it goes back to what we talked about, Susan, the growing up in an Italian-American family, always wanting to be a mother. Like, motherhood and family is just such a part of what I know. And I always wanted to be a mom. And I got married to my husband kind of later in life. And we started trying to conceive, and it didn't work. And that kind of never struck me as it would be an issue. It just kind of felt like, once you start having unprotected sex, you get pregnant, right? That's what you're told.
It's fine. It's going to happen.
Yeah, that's what happens. But that didn't happen.
Right.
Finding out why, what people don't know about infertility, it actually impacts, depends on who you ask. The World Health Organization says it's 1 in 6 people. The CDC says it's 1 in 5. But it impacts males and females equally. And we never found out why we have an issue with infertility. About a third of couples just never know. But I was at a very, very high pressure job and navigating infertility. And so what that looks like is, getting up at 5:30 in the morning to get to a fertility clinic, to get your blood drawn, to determine, what kind of meds you need to take and what kind of shots you have to self-administer. And just kind of knowing that you had to give yourself shots. I did not know that that's what IVF was like, giving yourself these big, gigantic shots. But navigating this as an executive was very challenging because I felt that it would interfere with my career if my boss knew that I was trying to become a mother. And so my struggle started with infertility. It was in 2014 when I started this journey. My husband and I got pregnant, which was wonderful. My pregnancy was beautiful. It was amazing. I feel so grateful to have had the opportunity to carry a child in my body. But my son was stillborn. And again, that is something you are not prepared for at all. Nobody prepares you. Nobody says, oh, you're having a baby. Your child might be stillborn. Let's talk about what that means, right?
Yeah.
We took all the classes on, and we filled out our birth plan, right? And we had, all the things you need when you're about to have a baby, but this was not one of them. So, our son was stillborn, and it was due to a uterine rupture that I had. So, very scary, scary situation.
Wow.
Yeah. I almost lost my life. So very grateful that I'm here, and that, I'm okay. There's an ER doctor that positively saved my life.
Wow.
But I got the double whammy of we lost our son and I lost my ability to carry. So we got that message at the same time. And that was...
Wow. I can't imagine just the emotional toll you had already been going through,
yes.
The stress of having full-time job and doing all that. So
yes.
You have the physical, the emotional, and then that,
very hard,
incredible, very hard. Yeah.
And you feel like, gosh, we've waited so long to get pregnant. I can't believe we have to start over. Right. Like,
yes.
And not just start over. Like I have to get pregnant again. I couldn't get pregnant. And so one of the things I found in my journey is having community, having people who have gone through something either the same or similar really helps you feel a lot less alone. And I was fortunate in that I knew women in my life who were cancer survivors and had their families through surrogacy. So I learned what surrogacy was about and how to do it. And we moved forward with the surrogacy journey. And again, we had to go through IVF again. And it's even more expensive these days, but it was an enormous financial drain, enormous. It took our savings account. We borrowed against our 401k. It was very, very stressful to go through surrogacy and infertility. At the time, there is very little coverage. Even today, there's only 19 states that mandate infertility coverage. But even in those states, like in New York, you have to be in a big company. Often it doesn't include the medication, which can be thousands of dollars for every round. Usually it's more than one round. So the finances are really overwhelming. And you combine that with the emotions that are really challenging. And we were matched with a family in Kentucky, a wonderful, wonderful woman. And long story short, our daughter was born with an incurable heart condition and she passed away. So this was now our second loss and just so unbelievably devastating. You think, why does this happen to me? Right.
Right. You must have been asked why?
Yeah. I had a very supportive boss who knew that we were expecting, but he had said to me, let's just not tell other people. It's just not you know, we don't need to yet. And he was protecting me and kind of in saying that to me. And so when we were called down to Kentucky to navigate her health, I was out of the office on a personal emergency for a few mm-hmm. weeks. And I got back to the office and very few people actually knew what happened. So here I am, you know, again, grieving this horrible loss and being very kind of disconnected at the office from what happened. And some of the people
having to pretend. Yeah, that's not good.
And, you know, again, yeah. I was in a very senior role. I was leading an initiative that was incredibly important to the board of directors. And so saying, you know, I had a child and the child, you know, didn't make it, like, it just didn't seem the right thing to say, especially, you know, where a lot of people just didn't know what was going on. So again, navigating that. And then long story short, the company I was at incredibly had a surrogacy benefit and IVF benefit. And I thought we were done. I thought this was it. You know, we just have to accept life and it's different. And for people who seek treatment, 65% give birth, but there's a big percentage of people that really want to have children that cannot. And I think that's another thing that's not talked about, you know, how you kind of survive and thrive in a life that isn't what you envisioned. But my husband is really amazing and said, I think we should try to figure this out. We've got this coverage with your work. Let's figure it out. And we were blessed with a surrogacy agency that waived their fees, a fertility clinic that worked with us, and we were able to try again. And we were matched with a surrogate in Utah, and we welcomed our daughter, Carolina, in 2019. She's 6 and a half. So yeah. It has a happy ending, but it was a very challenging time. And it really taught me so much about just having empathy in the workplace. You never know what people
Can
are going
to do. Ask you, Leah, when you look back at that time, do you think it was the right thing to do to keep it secret? I almost feel as if why should we have to keep private something that is so part of human nature and life?
I think the sad part about corporate America is it is still, quite frankly, very male dominated. And I think when you're navigating issues that will cause you to change as a person, in that you now are responsible for another life, you now have, you know, you juggle things outside of work, maybe you're not going to be as open to going to those events at night or, you know, traveling as much as you used to. You know, as a woman who was married but didn't have, you know, young children, I was kind of able to say yes to everything at work. And I think that the perception of me was I was always someone who would do whatever it took to get something done. And I was, you know, very driven. And, you know, would I think there would be a question of would I still be that way if I, you know, had a baby at home. And I really think that's true for so much of corporate America. So I wish it were different. And I think it is different in other places. But in America, I think our society is still very male dominated, and the culture is. So I guess it depends on where you're at. I don't think, looking back, I don't think it would have benefited me to have those, to be more open.
So what are some of the changes that you would like to see in corporate America that will support women going through this process?
So I think the biggest challenge is the economic burden. I think it's a huge burden. And lifting that burden for people is so important. And I was really amazed that this company I worked for had a surrogacy benefit. So I would say, you know, within workplaces, it is so uncommon to have, but also so unusual to use. I think I was the first employee in like 8 years since they had the benefit that actually used it.
Wow. So, that's surprising.
Yes. Yeah. So I think companies to think about, and I've spoken to a lot of HR teams about the benefits that they want to think about offering, because even if they're not used, knowing that they're there is really critical. Another thing that's really important is having benefits set up and knowing what to do when something like a stillbirth happens, because the reality is I didn't have a baby at home, so I didn't have maternity leave. I gave birth, my milk was coming in, I had a C-section, and I was back at work 2 weeks later. There's no maternity leave when you don't have a baby. Now, that doesn't have to be the case. Some companies have policies that say, you know, if your pregnancy ends after a certain number of weeks, you know, you're entitled to X number of weeks or months off. And I think that's really important. It is really important for companies to establish policies around loss. I have been giving back and speaking to many, many members of the infertility community. And I speak to women who I had an example of a woman who came to me because she was having a miscarriage at the office. Because miscarriages don't just happen in a minute, they happen over days. And so this woman was in the office miscarrying, and she came to me crying and said, you know, can we talk? Of course we can talk. What do I do? I said, go home. But we have this big project that's due. I said, you have to prioritize yourself. You know, she's like, but it's going to go on for days. Okay, just come up with some reason why you have to be home for days, right? Like, go. Yeah. And so I think, you know, it's not to say she should have gone to her boss and said what was happening, but I do think there have to be safe places at the office, places that we can actually trust and speak to HR. There are companies that have, you know, services where you can call a third party. And so the company doesn't really need to know what's happening, but they need to make accommodations for you. So I think that in corporate America, funding is really important, and also these accommodations and allowing people to grieve miscarriages, grieve losses, modify their schedule to go through infertility and not have to be, you know, stressed about making it to their meetings in time.
Oh, it's so silly when you listening to you describe all of this, and it makes no sense to me that people have to hide just being human, like they're going through human experiences and have to pretend that they're not. Yes. What are you seeing from a legislative standpoint? I know that you're involved in that. So what are you seeing? What are you hopeful for that will help with this?
It has been such a fascinating time. Obviously, last year was an election year. And so this was actually, you know, IVF, infertility. It was a huge element of the election. And right now, funny enough, just yesterday, Trump actually signed an executive order for his team to come up with a policy recommendation for how to expand IVF access and make it more affordable. And this is something that has been important for a very long time. I went down to DC in June of last year with Resolve. They're the National Infertility Alliance. They're wonderful. And they've been doing a lot of advocacy work, partnering you know, with politicians to, they really help tell individuals' stories of why, you know, these things are important. And there was a bill put forward that actually failed in June, failed in September. And the opposition for it was from the Republican Party exclusively. And so the challenge I see now is I see a great ray of hope that this executive order was put forward, but I also have concerns that something that's really, really important also to the Republican Party is what they call embryonic personhood, which is that an embryo has the same rights as humans. And it's a very pro-life stance, which interferes with IVF. You cannot do IVF without destroying non-viable embryos, without freezing embryos that either later get used or get destroyed or donated to science. And so these two things are in conflict. You can't be supportive of expanding IVF while at the same time believing in embryonic personhood. So I'm really interested to see what these recommendations are going to be, because there can be recommendations that say, oh, the government's going to fund all of it, right? It's all going to be free. But if providers can't actually do their job, then that doesn't mean anything. And we actually saw that happen just last year in Alabama. The Supreme Court ruled that embryos were humans, and all clinics had to shut down. And they were in the middle of treating patients that had waited for months and even years and were paying so much money to go through their cycles. And it was just on hold. So I am encouraged that this is a part of our conversation. I think that's great. And I'm really hopeful, but I'm also a little bit just nervous about, you know, how it'll all play out.
I think we're all nervous in general about where things on multiple levels yes. are headed. It's really, you know, an uncertain time.
It is.
Tell me, you decided to write a book about your journey. And what do you hope that most readers will take away from it?
Resilience and not feeling alone. So the book is called Fly Bravely. That's also a Substack. I write a Substack every week. It's Fly Bravely. And it is about my journey to welcoming my daughter through all of these challenges and all of these, you know, challenging times and how you keep going. How do you keep going? How do you maintain, you know, that positivity and just keep going when you feel like everything is lost? And so I also want people really to feel that they're not alone. I know when people go through infertility, they go through it looking at all of their friends who have families, who are having babies. And there's this syndrome, I'm forgetting the name of it now, but it's like a psychological phenomenon when you really, really want something and then you start to see that thing all over the place. So when I really, really wanted to be pregnant, I swear I walk out of my apartment and see a pregnant woman, see someone pushing a stroller, get on the subway and there's like a pregnant belly in front of me. And, you know, it's hard to live your life when you think you're the only one that can't get pregnant or that had a stillbirth or that, you know, has to do surrogacy because they can't carry themselves. So I hope that other people see themselves in my story and that it gives them hope.
What do you attribute your resilience to? I mean, you went through a lot and over an extended period of time, right?
You know, a lot of it was about support, community, and connections. I sought counseling. My husband and I went to grief counseling. I don't think we could have gotten through it as a couple without that. Women and men grieve very differently, and we needed to openly communicate about, you know, what we were dealing with. Finding community with others that were going through it, that was really important to me. And I made sure that when I was at my lowest points, I tried to find positivity in every day. So one of the things I did, like I said, I'm a mix of creative and business, but photography has always been something I just really enjoy as a hobby. And I went through a period of time where I forced myself to take a picture every day of something beautiful, because that would make me seek out a beautiful moment in every day. And some days I would get home and feel like I just had, you know, it was not a good day and nothing was beautiful. And I remember one of those days I took like a really close up macro shot of like the leaves of the cactus and it just looked really cool. It was like this really cool abstract image. And there was something about just the positivity of creating something that was beautiful that was helpful for me.
That's a great piece of advice. I mean, for two reasons. First of all, when you're doing something creative, it takes you out of kind of the now space. And that forced you to, there always is something beautiful. I mean, if you hear people who've gone through horrible, horrific tragedies and they say, look for the good because it's there.
Yes.
And that's an actionable thing you can do.
Yes. Yes. And also I started looking at coincidences that happened and synchronicities in my life. A story for another day, but the way I met my husband was very synchronous. It was like very unusual, very unexpected. And I think I just continue to look for moments that seem unexpected. I was having a tough day the other day and I looked down at the ground. There were two pennies and I picked them up and they were the years that we lost our two kids. And I was like, wow. Like that's
wow.
Right. And normally I would, like, before I went through all of this, I would have seen two pennies on the ground and just kept walking. Right.
Yeah.
Whatever. But there's this part of me that's like, those were put in my path for a reason. and they had our kids' dates on them. And I was like, wow, okay, thanks. Wow. I need it, you know?
Yeah.
So
there are no coincidences, right?
Right. Yeah. It's not an overly religious book, but there's a book called When God Winks at You, and it is about this. And somebody gifted it to me, and I read it, and it really changed the way I looked at, like, instead of missing the subway and being like, oh, I'm going to be late and miss the subway, I was like, who am I supposed to speak to now? Where am I going to, you know, like, something, all right, let's look at it more positively. So yeah. I think just having a more positive lens is what I was.
And we have to choose that, right? You have to choose to believe that these, that everything is connected and it all happens for a reason. And I think some people are very good at that. Some people have a tough time.
Yes.
Absolutely. And that's where that, that's kind of where resilience lays. People have it or don't. And it's fascinating to me why some are able to tap into that and some are not.
Yeah, I think it has a lot to do with, like, your belief system too, and what you believe, and who you are, even spiritually. So I think, but I think anyone can find it if they want to.
If they want to. My last question, I wanted to just briefly touch on empathy, because we hear that word a lot more today in conversation than ever before. And it's critical for leaders. It's critical for life, right? What is your belief system around it? And is it something that can be taught?
Mm-hmm. So I definitely believe empathy can be taught. Absolutely. And I will say that I was not an empathetic leader early in my career. I was very driven. And I expected my team to work just as hard as I did. And I know I was a difficult boss. I know it. And I remember the moment where things shifted for me and I really became much more introspective and said, I am not doing this right. And it was a woman on my team who was an incredible worker. She always did a great job. But I am a stickler for punctuality. I think being late is rude and it's disrespectful of other people's time. And I had a morning meeting for my team, like every Wednesday morning at 9 o'clock. And I expected people were there at 9 o'clock. And maybe 2 or 3 weeks in a row, she was like just running in at like 9:03, 9:05, 9:07. And I asked her to stay after the meeting. And I said, you know how I feel about being on time. What is going on? This is not acceptable. I don't want you to be late again. Like, this was my approach, right? It was terrible. It was terrible. And this, I was
at least you recognize it, right?
I was a young manager and I was just impatient and frustrated. And it was, again, this was a woman who was not, you know, a poor worker. She didn't have issues. She was a great employee. And she just started crying. And she said, my mom was diagnosed with cancer. I've had to start living with them and taking the bus to work. And the bus schedule is really unreliable. And I just stopped and I was like, oh my gosh, I'm an awful human being. I am so sorry. You know, this is just so, and the fact that she didn't feel she could tell me that, and it was just, it for me was, oh my gosh. And I think I said it earlier in this conversation, you just never know what someone else is going through. And so throughout everything I went through, I started to really, you know, approach things differently. Instead of, why are you late? You can't be late. It's, hey, you're always on time. You're such a great worker. What's going on? Is something going on with you? Because I've noticed you, you know, this is really not usual. This is unusual for you. What's going on? Right? Opening it up as a conversation, coming at it from the angle of, let me get to know you better. And I think in my relationships and partnerships and business development, it has been curiosity and empathy and understanding what the other party needs. It's not just, here's what I have to offer, take it and pay me for it. It's, here's what I have to offer and I think it can help you like this. And what are you really looking for? And how can we come together? So it really kind of started with the personal, but now the most successful business relationships that I've ever done really come from that perspective of shared corporate empathy. How can I help you as a company? And how can you help me? What do we have to offer each other? So it was a hard learned lesson. I, you know, but I know today, you know, gosh, that was like literally 20 years ago.
That was 20 years ago. So you've been a good leader for 20 years.
Well, I would think that. I'm sure, you know, every good leader has their bad days. But it was just such a turning point for me in my work.
That's wonderful. It speaks to that phrase, you know, everybody has, I'm paraphrasing, everyone has something going on we know nothing about.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It's so true. It's so true. And take the time to find out. Leah, I thank you so much for taking time to be on the show and sharing a good chunk of your life with us. And I'll be excited to see the book.
Thank you so much. It is a work in progress. Really looking forward to getting it out into the world. Thank you.
Terrific. Thank you. Stay with me as I go into our last break, and I'll be back to close out the show. Over on our Women to Watch YouTube channel, we have a partner profile series featuring some of the amazing executive women working at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. Our latest installment features Dr. Susan Firth. Here's an excerpt from our latest conversation. The goal, I would say, of CHOP is for every child to have a chance at a healthy future. And how does the Research Institute specifically support and help in that goal?
One of our strategic imperatives as an enterprise is to really promote research-driven precision medicine, you know, so diagnostics and therapeutics that are really tailored to an individual's circumstance. And I always add to that research-driven precision medicine that this has to be research-driven precision medicine for everyone. So we've invested in programs around health equity, research methods, and making sure that as we are pursuing our research and discovery, that we're thinking about how our questions apply to different populations, whether it's where they live, if they're rural or urban, or what their social determinants of health are. So we're trying to incorporate thinking broadly about improving child health to all populations. So we want to help children who are around the world and also in our backyard.
To learn more about Dr. Susan Firth, head over to our Women to Watch YouTube channel for the full interview.
We are CHOP. And we can't wait to show you around. We're the nation's first children's hospital. Now, a care network with more than 50 locations that continues to expand. 3 state-of-the-art research buildings with 1.5 million square feet of space. We have grown from 12 beds 165 years ago to nearly 600 beds and one of the best children's hospitals in the world. We have a level 1 trauma center, 11 floors of patient units, more than 20 operating rooms, first-of-its-kind delivery unit for babies with birth defects, a separate cardiac operative and catheterization suite, and places to learn, like our internationally recognized simulation center. We have trained generations of leaders in the field of pediatrics. We are world leaders in medicine, surgery, and science. One of the top recipients in NIH funding for pediatric research. In this building, pioneers in CAR T therapy, mitochondrial disease, brain tumors, hyperinsulinism, and other rare diseases. Here, groundbreaking work in fetal surgery, genetics and genomics, and neurology. In our newest building, leaders in social determinants of health, clinical informatics and epidemiology, autism, trauma and injury prevention. Our patients come from every state and 115 countries. Meeting these challenges requires the best and the brightest. We are passionate about pediatrics. we are motivated to make a difference in the world and in our community. We are a team. We are CHOP.
That's it, everyone, for another week of Women to Watch. Thank you so much for being with me. Next week, I'm going to be speaking with Erica Bennett, and Erica is the co-founder of Orca Golf. They're custom golf bags for men and women. Thank you, as always, to our sponsors for helping me to bring you the show each and every week, and I'll see you next week.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.